This is Sheila Bender, and you are listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Today we have with us Seattle writer William Kenauer, who is the author of Fearless Writing, How to Create Boldly and Write with Confidence, and also the book Write Within Yourself, An Author's Companion. He is the editor-in-chief of Author Magazine and a sought-after speaker and teacher. In addition to his books, he's been published in the New York Times and Edible Seattle, Parent Map, Tiferet Journal, and he has also been featured as a blogger for the Huffington Post. His video interviews with hundreds of writers, from Nora Ephron to Amy Tan to William Gibson, are widely considered the best of their kind on the internet. He also hosts the online radio program Author to Author, where every week he and a different guest discuss the books we write and the lives we lead. You can find out more about him and his work on the web at www.williamkenauer.com, and I will spell that K-E-N-O-W-E-R, William Kenauer. And I want to welcome you to the program this morning. I'm going to call you Bill, as I know people do, although your website is William Kenauer. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Sheila, and it's okay. You know what the problem is? And you know this as a writer. It's branding. I'm Bill to everybody, but you got to pick a name, don't you?
Oh, yes,
you only
I
have
do.
One.
All right.
Two.
Who would you like to be if I do address you again by name?
Bill.
All right. Okay. And we'll repeat your website at the end of our conversation.
Excellent.
So there's so much we could talk about. But one of my burning questions is, how did you come to the work you do to inform and inspire writers, and especially about having the courage to write?
If you had described to me 20 years ago the work I'd be doing now, I would have thought you're nuts. It was not what I was interested in. I wanted to write fiction, I thought. I saw myself as kind of an entertainer. It had always been my thing, whether I was doing theater as a young man or like comedic theater as a young man or writing stories. I wanted to make stuff up, but it never really went. I couldn't find a publisher for my books, and I always felt something was not quite right in writing fiction for me. I didn't think of anything else to write. That seemed to me, in my mind, the only thing you kind of could write, although I know there's many other things to write. And then when I started Author Magazine in 2008, I started writing a column for the magazine every day. These were sort of inspirational in nature, sort of about writing, but really about the reasons we don't write or the reasons we're afraid to write. So it was creative nonfiction, and that was so much easier for me and so effortless, and I had sort of found my spot. I just kind of didn't look back. I will tell you, it took a while to sort of accept that I was writing nonfiction as opposed to fiction. I had so identified as a fiction writer, if that makes sense.
No, it,
so
it does. Yeah.
And you know what's interesting about that, Sheila, is that writers, what do we struggle with so much in our early is rejection and acceptance, right?
You right. Know?
Well, I had not actually accepted what I really do, and it was difficult to accept it. But once I did, the acceptance from outside came to me.
It seems to me that we hold our expectations, like you said, attached. We're attached to our expectations. And a lot of us grew up in a literary culture where if you were a writer, people expected you to be a novelist. That was what was
right.
esteemed. And how we measure ourselves against that. So it's a really important thing that you're saying about identify what your genre is and
yeah.
find out what success you have with it. And who knows, maybe in the future you'll have a novel. This idea about rejection is really an important one, isn't it, for writers?
Yeah.
You want
yeah.
to address anything about what it feels
well,
like?
I feel like my whole life has been a conversation about rejection and loss and what it is and isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an interesting story about rejection. So as a young man, I was just talking to my wife about this the other day, that the idea of romantic love, very important to me. It seemed to me the sort of highest kind of relationship, a romantic relationship. I wanted a girlfriend from as early as a person could want a girlfriend. But I always felt like, oh, I'd ask them out and they'd say no. And it was, and I was more consumed with the girls who said no than the ones who I was told, like, she's interested in you. And she's, but I was just consumed with the concept of rejection. And I would call girls up on the phone and I'd be so nervous. Would they say no? They say yes. But the woman I'm married to now, Jennifer, who's also a writer and an artist, I saw her in a play when I was 17. She was 17, and I was like, I've got to get to know her. I just have to. And my brother knew her, and he gave me her number. He finagled her number out of her. I went to call her. It was going to be a blind call. I'd never done this before. And I went to the phone preparing for the fear I knew always came when I had to make those calls to girls. And there was no fear. Hmm. And that's because for the first time in all the girls I had asked out, I was asking out someone I was not calling so I could have a girlfriend, which is really what I wanted at that time. Just like writers just want to be published or just want an agent. I wanted to get to know her. I was lined up with something I actually wanted. I accepted what I wanted, and I didn't fear the call at all. And many years later, we married. And so it always struck me as the perfect metaphor for acceptance and rejection, that you have to first figure out what you actually want, the story you want to tell in the way you want to tell it. And if you reject that a little bit, like you think, I want to write literary romance, but I better just make it romance, or I better just make it literary because that sells or whatever. Or if you don't tell it exactly the way you want to tell it, if you reject yourself just a little bit, I always feel that that infects the story a little bit, and you are more likely to see it rejected because you have not allowed the thing to be what it actually wants to be, and the reader can sense that sort of mixed quality to it, and they may not be able to identify it, but they know it's not in form.
Yes.
And so I really believe as a writer, the first thing you've got to do is accept yourself, accept what you're interested in, accept what you're curious about, and just explore it to its fullest potential.
So, Bill, I think that we're bordering on a discussion of where writer's block comes from.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think when we are rejecting our truth, which might be the truth of the genre we want to write in, the truth of the story we want to tell,
Right. It
not only causes us to write things that don't work, but it also causes us sometimes to not write anything at all and to feel like a failure, which in a way we're failing to honor our true self. So we're right in that way.
Yes.
But I think we're lucky these days to have so many places looking for work. They might not be the New Yorker, but they're looking, and there are places we connect with people who are reading the subjects that we're interested in writing about, like you found with Author Magazine. So this work that you do, both in print and videos, interviews, what is the hardest part of that for you, if there is one? Maybe there's no hard part.
Part of the reason I was drawn to it is it was so easy.
Uh-huh.
And maybe that was the hardest part, and I think maybe is still the hardest part, accepting that it's easy and that that's okay. So I write 4 essays a week, 3 for Author and 1 for the Good Men Project. I write 1 essay a week for them. I just finished one this morning. But that's a lot of essays. And stuff for Author, it's all around creativity and writing. I've probably written 1,000 of these things. And the thing I have to keep reminding myself when I sit down to write these is, don't presume you know what it's about. Go find today what is interesting about it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I forget that, forget to say, my job is to find what's interesting in this subject, even though I've written about it for years, the same sort of subject, creativity, spirituality, inspiration. I can't do it. It suddenly, it becomes boring to me, or I start imitating myself.
Hmm.
And so in some ways, the challenge is to keep reminding myself, get curious, inspire yourself. Because I can kind of just do it now. I almost know the formula to these kinds of essays, but then I get bored of them, and they're not alive.
Can you give us an example? Did you say you just finished one this morning?
Yeah, I was writing one about this time I saw my son. I was going with my son Max, who was 7 at the time, to this little gymnasium that was nearby at this community center. And I knew how they had all these balls and bats and hoops and things for kids to play in this gymnasium, sort of just do whatever you want. I thought, oh, I'll go do that with my son. But the thing was, he was really not a sports kid like I had been as a young man. I was really into sports, and he just isn't. He was into making up stories, and he was very creative. But still, we got to go. Let's see what it's like. And so we go there, and I pick up a ball and bat and say, let's try hitting the ball. He's like, okay, fine. So I start pitching it to him. He's having trouble hitting the ball, and then this other boy shows up, and he says, can I play with you? And I was like, okay, fine. And so then I try pitching again to Max. He has trouble hitting it. Then I go to pitch to the other boy, and all of a sudden I see the difference between Max and the boy, because the boy is totally focused just on his hands and the bat in his hands and the ball in my hands. That's all he's focused on. He hits it easily. And then when Max takes his turn again, I see that Max is actually thinking about a story about the fact that he's hitting the ball. I can tell by the focus of his eyes, he's more interested in what's in his head, what's in his hands, the bat in his hands, what he's actually doing. And that was the determination. That's why he was having trouble. Not because he couldn't play ball, but because he was more interested in his stories than in playing baseball. And so I was like, I always thought that was an interesting moment of success and failure, but I thought, okay, fine, I've told that story. And then sort of the so what? And what came to me, I thought, what's exciting to me about that today as I sit in my chair writing that story? And it had to do with freedom, which is your mind is always free. Your mind is always free to think about anything, no matter what your body is doing, which was the great challenge of sports. My mind would wander. And when I thought about success, Sheila, this was interesting because success was such a thing to me. The thing I thought it would give me was freedom. Freedom. Freedom from work that I didn't want to do. Freedom from worrying about my survival. Freedom from my ego worrying that I'm not successful. As a man, it can be such a big deal, you know. It struck me that what I got excited about in writing that this morning is it's not understanding that you're already free that prevents you from often having the success you think you want that will give you the freedom. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I have to ask you, how did your session of batting go that day with your son when you realized this?
I realized it on the way home. I was thinking about it thinking about it. And I wanted to talk to him about it, give him advice. And they never listen to my advice unless they ask for it. And so I learned to stop giving it eventually.
Yeah. Well, speaking of your advice, that's a very wonderful insight.
Thanks.
That was something you were writing for which of your venues?
That was for the Good Men Project. I like to write about success, the relationship between success and equality. That's kind of what I write about.
So if people want to read more of your work or anybody's at the project, where is it available?
It's the Good Men Project's a website. It's a big blog. I think the best place is to go to my website, williamkanauer.com. I have links to everything there.
Great. Thank you.
And so they can just link to it there.
Okay. Speaking about the regularity of and formula that you have to battle each time you write these essays, is there a column length involved or not?
For author, I try to do 400 to 500 words, and for Good Men Project, I usually hit around 800 words.
Do you find part of this need you have to break out of the formula so you can think about what's interesting, does that lead you to write more words than you need and then to have to tightly edit?
No. I learned I can do these in about one draft, tango.
Wow.
And the thing I do crave when I write book-length projects is being able to stretch out a little bit and write 3,000 words on the subject as opposed to 800. I do longer chapters.
Right.
But no, I tend to do them in one draft. At this point, I just kind of know, okay, you've got the problem down, now let's get to the resolution. And you know what's interesting, actually? The author thing was really important for me because I do 3 a week now, but for about 5 or 6 years, I did 5 a week, one a day. And the way I said to myself is, okay, I'm doing one a day because we needed regular content. And I was like, I am not going to try and perfect these things. I will spend my whole day, right, and I have other things I want to work on. So what I said to myself was, how good can you do in 45 minutes? I'll give you 45 minutes to write the best thing you can in that time. And what you will do is you will get better, I told myself, at writing something good in 45 minutes. And that restriction of word and time was so helpful to me. I stopped questioning myself. I stopped trying to be perfect. And something better came out, something looser. And often, I trusted an instinct, whereas before I would question it. So I got better and better and better at just trusting the first impulse I had and seeing where it would go and learning that my job was not to know what the essay was about, but to discover it.
Right.
And if I just relaxed, I could.
Wow.
Usually in 45 minutes,
You are listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life with Sheila Bender on KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. Today, Sheila is talking with Seattle area author William Kanauer about his work inspiring writers to sit down and write despite their fears.
So I want to add, so you said time limit and word limit, but also the fact that you were writing every day practically. They tell us now that people who write frequently write better, even if they don't know what they're doing some of the days that they write, the practice. And I think in our world today, everything counts. Emails, blog posts, anything we do is writing. It's bringing ourselves to a page or a screen and making words happen. So I think that's a third element and very wonderful for you that you had those three come together. And that was for Author Magazine.
Author, yeah.
Okay, and that still exists.
Yeah.
And people can find it online?
They can find it online. Every single one of my essays is cataloged there, all for free.
Wow.
All there.
And
I know.
So is the whole magazine things that are of interest to writers?
It's for writers. So it's my video interviews with writers, as you listed earlier, but it's all genres, all types. I've got one with Sean Wong right now, the University of Washington literary writer. But before that, I think it was Kim Hornsby, who writes romance. And before that, actually, the president-elect of the Romance Writers of America, and also literary writers, suspense writers, everybody. Donald Moss, I had him on there, the literary agent and writer. So it's all interviews with writers, and then my stuff is about creativity and writing. Then we have articles on writing, so about writing and the writing life. So
it's
all
a really rich resource.
Rich. And free, even better.
A bargain, right?
That's right.
So then the radio program, does it go along with that, author to author? Is that something
separate?
Yeah,
so it's... Yeah, so it's a podcast. I called it Internet Radio. It's really, it's a podcast. It's an offshoot of Author Magazine. There's links to it on Author. There's links to it on my website. You can find it on iTunes. That's where we post the podcasts. And those are live conversations, half an hour like this, where we just talk about whatever I feel like talking about today.
Right. I am going to switch gears now and ask you in what way you've been inspired by your readers and listeners and the people you address. We know how you inspire them. I already feel inspired. I want to hang up right now and go home and write for 45 minutes. What has helped you, and what have you received from the people that you inspire?
Wow. First of all, in order to inspire someone, I have to be inspired. So anytime I give a talk or write, if I have an audience, I have to inspire myself. So that's always nice. I have learned that when I teach, so I teach something called fearless writing a lot. I'll give these workshops where it's really like, it's really a self-help workshop for writers where we deal with our fears and our emotional blocks to writing. And I realized growing up, I was afraid of people's fear, if that makes sense. In other words, if someone was afraid or anxious, I just wanted to get as far away from them as possible. I felt like I could be infected by it. I felt like it was like a contagion. And I needed just to put myself in a bubble where I could be brave and do the things I wanted to do. But doing this work has taught me to love people's fear as an opening, as an opportunity to understand them better and myself better and what it means to be human better. And because of this work, I'm not afraid of other people's fear anymore, and by extension, my own. That fear is just information about my attention. It's not proof of my weakness. It's not proof of anything wrong in the world. It is just information about what I'm thinking about, what I'm looking at. And it's there to help me in its own way. It loves me and wants to guide me back. And doing this work, it's so much easier to see it in other people, to see the sort of flimsiness of the unreality of their fear. It's harder to see it in myself.
Right.
And so in that way, the work has been invaluable to me personally.
That is a very, very fine answer. Thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome.
And now I think a really good thing to do would be for us to hear an excerpt, if you have it, from your book, Fearless Writing.
Yes. Yes, I do have an excerpt from my book, which is not normally the kind of book that you can read from. So the whole concept behind Fearless Writing, the book and the sort of workshop, is that writing is inherently fearless. If you're writing, you're not afraid. You can't be afraid and writing. But we float in and out of fear all the time. And the number one obstacle to our work is the idea that we should care what other people think of our stuff. That just hangs over everybody. No matter how experienced you are, when you sit down to write, you have to forget about the fact that people are going to read it. You can't worry what people are going to think about it. And I think writers do that all the time. And that worry comes in all different shapes and sizes. So this is a book about how to forget about the audience you love and want to share your work with so that you can write something worth sharing with them. In the first chapter, I say, this is what the whole book's about. You don't have to care what people think about your stuff. And I say, I'm going to get into all that about what it means. But I say this. I mean, it's actually going to be kind of short. Is that okay, Sheila?
That's fine, because we have lots to talk about.
Good. And so what I say is, I'm going to discuss about all the ways we can avoid thinking about what other people think of our stuff. But I say, in the meantime, remember this. You will find your confidence and begin to write fearlessly the moment you stop caring about what anyone else thinks. That's it. Really. I have suffered greatly over my life. I've felt blocked, gotten rejected, and have abandoned stories I couldn't finish. In every instance, my suffering abated the moment I stopped caring what anyone else would think of what I was writing. If you find it hard to believe, read on. I will look at all the different challenges writers face in the coming chapters and how each challenge compels us in its unique way to move our attention away from where our confidence and fearlessness reside. But in the meantime, if you want to write something and share it with others, if you want to be an author, begin simply by forgetting about all those other people with whom you will eventually share what you have written. Forget about criticism and praise. Forget about markets and agents and editors. You will remember all of that in time. But for now, forget it. No one is looking over your shoulder. No one is reading what you have written, and no one has an opinion about it. Right now, you are alone, and it is time to write.
Okay.
And I really think that's true.
Yes.
I think that's very true.
Yes, because that's how we find all the things you said we were looking for. Where are we curious? What is it we really want to write about? How do we want to write about it?
That's right.
Those questions get answered if we let ourselves just sit there and write. So I will this afternoon, I promise.
Good. Good.
Yeah. So this book has been successful with writers. It's been successful for itself, for you, and it keeps you always remembering your message. And
yeah, it does.
I think you might have another book project in mind, do you?
I do. It really stemmed in part from I raised a kid on the autism spectrum, mm-hmm. and I published a piece in the New York Times called An Autistic Son's Lesson, No One is Broken. And it was really about what I had to learn in raising a kid who was just not doing things the way other kids were doing it. I don't even like the word autism, but it helps people understand the way some kids are coming at things.
Mm-hmm.
The only way I could be of use to him was if I didn't try to fix him. As soon as I tried to fix him, and he was struggling as a young kid, and so there was a great temptation out of my fear for his future to try to fix him. But if I fixed him, that meant he was broken, right? You'd only fix things that are broken. And so the only way I could help him is if I didn't fix him. So the only way I couldn't fix him if I didn't see him as broken. And the only way I could see him as not broken is if I didn't see anyone in the world as broken, because I simply intellectually couldn't make the leap from this kid who would do all these odd things to other people. So I couldn't see a world with broken people. And so I started having to practice seeing a world where no one was broken, no matter what they were doing, no matter how heinous or cruel or odd, whatever it was, I couldn't see them as broken. It was a great practice. And eventually I turned that lens on myself. And I realized that to some degree, writers ask themselves the question. I don't know if you ever asked it, but I think you did, Sheila, when you were starting out and taking classes from David Wagoner. This horrible question of, do I have what it takes?
Absolutely.
Do I have what it takes?
Yeah.
Am I one of those who has it, whatever mm-hmm. it is? Mm-hmm. And I think I asked myself that question for years and years because I wasn't publishing. God, I'm sure I could do this thing, but why isn't it happening? Maybe I don't have what it takes. And somewhere in working with my son and trying to see a world without broken people, I realized, what if everyone has what it takes? What if I can't answer that question because everyone does? And the only difference in the expression of our abilities is whether we believe that or not. That when I go to write, I know I have what it takes because everyone does. I know I have what it takes to succeed. Not everyone wants to be a writer, mm-hmm. but everyone wants to do something. Everyone inherently has what it takes to succeed at that thing that they love to do, if they accept that everyone does. And it was so profound to me, because as a writer, Sheila, and you have to know this, that we spend a lot of times comparing ourselves. Casually, this one's a genius. This one not so good. This one has this ranking on Amazon. This one down here. This one's a New York Times bestseller. This one. We're constantly comparing ourselves. And yet, the truth is we're inherently, unavoidably equal in what we actually are. We have different lives, different expressions, different books, but we're inherently equal. And I came to see the relationship between inherent equality and my own unique success. And so that's what the next book's about. Everyone has what it takes. For writers to be able to drop the comparison about, for all the different reasons, so that you can find your own sort of inherent genius. It's a challenge because we are so drawn to compare ourselves. We are so drawn to see where we rank in the world of artists.
Right.
And it disables us.
Right. So I want to add that we could substitute some things for that comparison and answer that question. Do we have what it takes? I agree with you. And I think we wouldn't be compelled to write. It wouldn't even be in our head if we didn't have it to
right.
do it. We would do something
right.
else. We would do
exactly.
dance, or we would do visual art. So we have what it takes if we want to be a writer. And then what happens, I think, is instead of comparing ourselves to somebody we've read or who ranks highly on Amazon, we should ask, what is it I can learn from their writing? What about
sure.
it resonates with me?
Yeah.
What do I admire?
Yeah.
What do I think is a mistake? And not that we go back into our own writing right away and go, oh, I did that, I didn't do that. But it sits with us. It's there. It's a way of learning. So almost any piece of writing is a mentor for us to our own writing if we look
Absolutely.
At it that way. And I think it's such a good lesson for you to be having the insight about and now the capacity to write a book about. And it'll be great.
I love this work. It's a natural extension of fearless writing. Here's the problem with the question, do I have what it takes? There's only one answer, and that's yes. Mm-hmm. It's the only answer. It's like the question, am I worthy of love? Don't even ask that question. It presumes there's more than one answer. If you ask the question, it presumes there's more than one answer. If there's only one answer, you can't even ask the question. It's just, what do I want to share? In fact, it's interesting what you said, Sheila, because there's a whole chapter in the book about what do you do with other writers? How do you deal with not comparing yourself to other writers? And, of course, the answer is learn from them, even the ones you don't like. I learned a lot from reading stuff I did not like at all. That I, like, hated, you know. But instead of just hating it, I look at what is it they're doing that you don't want to see on the page. They have the right to do it, but it's got to be telling you or me something about what I want, to try to use it to learn about me and about writing, whether I love it or not.
Right.
And so that's another significant part of the
So my
book.
Advice to you, my unsolicited advice is, hurry up, finish that book, get it out there.
Finish. I got to wait for the publisher to say,
Oh,
it's done.
All right,
now,
good.
Now we're just waiting on the publishers to make
okay.
up their minds.
Well, yeah. Good. I hope they do quickly and that it's positive. But as you know, there's no failure, so there'll be other publishers to present it to. So we're going to have to close soon. I want to be sure that I repeat your website where people can find links to your various essays. And I assume you have links to Author Magazine and to Author there. So this is your portal to all things Bill Kenauer.
That's right.
WilliamKenauer.com. And it's after William, KenOwer. And look for his book, Fearless Writing, How to Create Boldly and Write with Confidence. I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on, Sheila.
In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman.